I got into the family box, the box of photos, which are the photos that have come to me over the years. I am the last Holden living, and so as my family passed away, they made sure that I got the historical information because they knew I was very interested. And so just as a way of maybe cluing you in, if you're very interested in your particular family history, make it clear to the people that that's important to you, because it's treasure when then you have these wonderful things to go back into. So I went into the box and kind of looked through these wonderful old photos that I have. This first one, for example, is a tintype, which was a photo that was actually done on a piece of metal. And probably every different kind of photographic process used as it evolved over the years, I have a sample of in my photo collection. So we'll begin now. J.H. Holden was known as Harry Holden. He was born in 1855. Yes, I am his granddaughter. And I'll do the math for you. It was a miracle. I was born in 1950, 95 years later. And the logical question I always get asked is, are you sure you're not the great-great-great-granddaughter of Harry Holden? And I'm sure. So he was born in 1855. The way this all worked was my grandmother was born in 1875. And she had my father at exactly my age. I'm 42 now, and at a time when Harry was 62. And so by virtue of the math, it all works out that I managed to get here and still be the granddaughter, not a couple of generations in between. So this has actually been just a delightful adventure to come up and be with these miners and share with them information about my family. This is kind of like showing home movies, and it was interesting to see people enjoy these photos as much as I have. So I'll tell you a little bit about Harry. When he discovered the Holden mine, he was right around 40. You know, late 30s or early 40s. He'd had some life before, you know, he became known as the fellow that discovered the mine. He was born in Springfield, Massachusetts. Raised in New York State. Don't quite know what they did there. I'm still studying the family, and I've gotten hooked on genealogy, so I'm tracing these roots as best I can. It's an addiction for those of you who have gotten involved in genealogy. You know, once you get started, and you know, if you find an interest, that's it. You know, that's I'm a researcher in my profession, and so this is just one more thing to research, and I'm hooked. I would like you folks to remind me when perhaps it's 25 minutes after 7. I don't want to run over and interrupt the normal scheduling for Eucharist, so maybe you can help remind me. I have about 5 minutes to 7 right now. He was, among other things, a fine vocalist. He had a beautiful Irish tenor voice. He was singing in St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City, I understand. This is as told to me by my oldest uncle, Callie. And a patroness of New York City heard him, decided this person had potential. She sent him off to Europe to study. We don't know if he actually did, but he came back and traveled then in a troupe of people all over the United States with a soprano, with a woman who was, see if I have the right, known as the Jenny Lind of her day, if that name means anything to you people. The Jenny Lind of America. That's right. And someone named Professor Lombard. So they were traveling around doing their show. He ended up in Virginia City doing a show. And he thought to himself, here I am on the stage, they're throwing me roses and they're pulling a fortune out of this earth. And he got the mining bug there. He did not make the appearance that they had next in San Francisco. He never showed up. He was off prospecting. And off he went. We know he was in Leadville, Colorado, prospecting there. I believe he was an assayer with the mine for some period of time. He was pretty good at it. Made a good little bit of money. What I'm telling you is all is told to me by my oldest uncle, of course. Went off to New York City to invest in the stock exchange, and as Callie said, He went off to play with the big boys, and they were just waiting for him. And so he lost everything in that venture, and had to start again. Harry Holden did not come from a position of privilege. He was a person who was looking for his opportunity in life, like most of us. And so he happened to be, I think, very entrepreneurial in nature, and started over and over again a number of times. He was in the grocery business in Iowa. He read law for a winter with his uncle in San Francisco. He was kind of all over the place, but I think he always gravitated back to the mining, and he did lots of prospecting. He prospected all over these Cascade Mountains. I know he was up in the Yukon. And he was somehow associated, perhaps, with Major Rogers, who worked with the Great Northern Railroad here. We're pretty sure he did not work for the railroad, but traveled with them, perhaps scouted for them and helped them. We're not clear what the association is. But anyway, that's how he came through here, because the railway was looking for a way to bring the railroad through here. And he one way or another, saw the mineral in place and had a good feeling that there was potential for a mine here. So now we can start with the slides. This is an early tintype. I'd say he is, in his early 20s here, side by side with a picture of my dad at that age. They're very, very similar in appearance. It was interesting to see this. Hairline, eyebrows, everything. Get a load of that tie. Isn't that great? This would be probably late 1870s, thereabouts. He's in his 20s. Another tin type with colorized cheeks, sometimes same age. This photo, if you have seen the book Surprising Gift that the Village publishes, appears in that book. Again, he's in his early 20s. This is the photo I selected to go on the sign up at the Portal Museum. Harry would have been right around, late 30s, 40 in this picture. And that was about how old he was when he found the mine. We figured he found the mine right around 100 years ago now. And about shortly after he claimed the mine, which he did filed his claims for the mine in 1896, he married his bride, Alma Lord Holden, which is my grandmother, and this is Alma. And she was 20 years his junior. And she came from a ranching family in Chelan by the name of Lord. Her father, Edwin Harvey Lord, my great-grandfather, was the first peach rancher I just recently learned in Yakima. They came across the country in a wagon train, settled in the Oregon territories first, and headed up towards the Wenatchee Valley and settled in these parts. I have a story of the time that the Indians raided their wagon, and a couple of the kids got lost for some days. They had some really interesting wild stories to tell from the early days. And so that's her side of the family. The Lord family is interesting in its own right. This shot is probably taken in the early 1900s. I have just a few photos from the early days up here. Alma is the second from the right on the horse there. And the little guys on the horse in front of her, one of them is probably son number one, John Harold Jr., who became known as Callie. And this is a bunkhouse which none of the miners recognized, so I guess it didn't stand too long, but they had room for wood storage and I guess sleeping and cooking facilities. It was a big, long building. Harry and Alma are the two grown-ups on the right there with perhaps Callie, the guy in the little hat sitting next to Mom there. As you start to see some photos of Harry in his adult years, you'll recognize the characteristic mustache. He had this big bristle mustache. It was his trademark. Have any of you been up hiking up to Holden Lake or up to Heart Lake? Know the area? You know that, do you see the glaciers that are up there? Well, I'm not sure these are the women, but my grandfather named those glaciers, and one of those glaciers, the one that feeds Holden Lake, is called the Mary Green, and Mary Green may very well be one of these ladies. And Isella, the glacier that hangs on the other side of Bonanza, that feeds Heart Lake, is a contraction of two women's name. One of them is Isabel Mitchell, so Isabel, and it's a contraction of Isabel and Alma. Harry's wife, and so that's where the names for those glaciers came from. I'm also under the impression Harry named Bonanza. I'm not positive about that. He was here early enough, he got to kind of name things. So here's Harry heading up the trail to do some work. Remember, he filed his claims in 1896. He would have been 41 by then, and he went about developing this mine and doing the best he could to get it into production or to sell it for the best he could be. He was not a man of means. He had to raise capital. And so every summer they had to come up for the assessment season, as the village still does today, to maintain the claims that he had made with the state on the mines up here. There were four claims originally, I believe. This is another shot of that bunkhouse, and these are two of the folks that were in that shot sitting down. Just another shot of the bunkhouse. I was hoping the miners might recognize it if I gave them a couple of different views of it and remembered it from the 1930s and later. This is a fellow that the miners all knew. His name is Oscar Getty. If any of you saw the sign down at Lucerne, the interpretive sign where the boat comes in, this is the fellow that that sign was remembered for. He was a general hand around here. I don't quite know Oscar's complete story, but I actually met this man myself in 1970. He was still here. He was quite an old man, and he remembered taking one of the little Holden boys up to the village here on horseback when they were like 18 months old. He thought it might have actually been my dad. I'm not sure about that. My dad was the last, came along quite late. So anyhow, he was quite an old character. Another one of the early cabins that was here. We're back in Chelan now. Any of you from the Chelan area, the Wenatchee Valley in this area? Well, this is inside what looks like a pharmacy, maybe, and he's visiting with this fellow here. And the one thing I learned from the photo was that he smoked cigars, at least on occasion. He's got a big one there in his hand. He's probably, I don't know, 50 here. I have to guess, judging by the salt and pepper in the mustache and the quantities of hair that were remaining. He was a businessman. You may think, when you think of Holden as the person who discovered the mine, as kind of maybe this grizzled old prospector, this mental image you may have of him, he in fact was very much the businessman. He traveled all over the United States and Canada trying to find investors. And this was characteristic dress for him, the Prince Albert coat and tie. He often sported a derby hat. So this is the Harry Holden that the folks in Chelan knew. In 1899, the Holden Gold and Copper Mining Company was formed for the purpose of raising capital. They sold shares in the company. Harry Holden was the general manager. This is his calling card. The person in the top right there, R.H. Lord, is Dick Lord, my grandmother's brother. So it was kept in the family somewhat. I don't know who Maloney is. On the back of this card, it says, "Please accept the enclosed gift." It was in company with a Christmas bonus, or I don't exactly know what. It's written in his hand. He did have a beautiful hand. This is a picture of the stock, which today is, of course, of no value, although it's real pretty. You'll notice up on the stamps there on the top left, R.H. Lord has written and stamped the shares and verified them as secretary. And these shares are made out to Mrs. Mary E. Lord, which would be my great-grandmother, Alma's mom, and signed by J.H. Holden in the bottom right there. And this was made out in 1899, I think that says, and each share was worth how much?
10 cents,
1899. Another company was formed later on, perhaps 10 to 15 years later. It's not clear in the records exactly when the Chelan Transportation and Smelting Company was formed, but Harry was again trying to sell interest in the mine, develop the mine, and think about how far we are from anywhere here. Transportation was a big problem. So again, they formed another corporation to raise capital to see what they could do about addressing the problems of transportation there. And I believe even then they were still trying to work out the problems of building a small gauge railroad up those switchbacks and getting it up here. Ultimately, they gave up and went with trucks. This was made out to Harry himself, J.H. Holden. These shares were by now led in the value of $1, and signed by Fred Thompson and Thomas Maloney, the officers of the corporation, president and secretary. My grandmother, as certainly very much a part of this family business, had her part to play. She was certainly one of the Proper Ladies of Chelan, and Proper Ladies had their calling cards, and I don't know if you have grandmothers that have the old porcelain bowls they all kept by their doors, and the calling cards went into the bowl, and when you made your visit, you left your card. That's why they're called calling cards. You made a call, and you left the card. This is a picture of Alma, dressed in her finery. I'm guessing her maybe at about 35 here. This would have been then in about 1910. And I took a close-up of her because I thought this hat was a kick. Maybe, what do you, kind of bird do you figure that was? Maybe a duck or pheasant with the fur brim. So that was in then, I guess. They were founding members of St. Andrew's Episcopal Church, which is in Chelan. The landscape has changed a little bit since then, if you know what Chelan looks like downtown there, but this church stands today. They were married there in 1898. This was one of the events that Alma was involved in sponsoring, some kind of a fundraiser by all appearances. This was a card sent to me by a cousin recently. And if you'll notice under patronesses, Mrs. Campbell is listed here. She is the Mrs. Campbell of the Campbell Hotel at Chelan. The other name I recognize is Mrs. Whaley. I believe the Whaleys had the first department store in Chelan, and we'll see that name on a storefront in a second here. Admission, 50 cents, so what would that be today? Maybe $25? This is a panorama of the community of Chelan. Perhaps if you envision yourself going back down the lake, kind of the view shooting out over the city away from the lake. And I have this photo in here to show you their home. In 1903, the Holdens bought this house here from R.D. Johnson, who built it. And they probably bought it after a year after he had constructed it. And this is where they raised their family and lived until Harry died in 1918, and for some time after that. Some shots of the inside. This is the parlor inside the house. It's striking me right now, there was an awfully lot of light inside this room. I think of Victorian era homes as being kind of dark. At least there was light coming in the windows. Shot of the dining room from the living room, and I'm impressed by this wallpaper. Interesting looking. A little better view of the dining room. Looked like they had dolled the house up either for the photo with the banners there, or for the photographer perhaps. They did travel a lot. Harry traveled with the family and without the family. We have in the family today the china and the silver that he brought Grandma from Tiffany's in New York. They are in this photo. They are in Southern California. We were figuring this was one of the missions in the Southern California area, and perhaps the one in Los Angeles. And can you pick out Harry and Alma? She's got a big hat on, a huge scarf wrapped around it. Just on the right there, a third up from the bottom. See the big mustache. He's got his bowler derby on. He's kind of on the end of the row there. If any of you are from Southern California, maybe you would recognize this place. Some place in Los Angeles, probably near the corner of Mission and Orange Groves. And Harry is peeking over the shoulder of the lady in the white dress in the front. Anybody recognize this scene? Ever been to San Francisco? That's the Cliff House. And I suppose he's in San Francisco, and he's in front of a photographer's backdrop of the Cliff House. And there he is in his Prince Albert coat and tie and derby hat. He's probably 60 in this picture, I guess, late 50s or 60. So we're back home now just some shots of him in his later years. He was quite active until he died. He died of cancer, and I'm sure he was physically very strong. He didn't die of, you know, a chronic problem, but something that attacked him, I think, rather quickly and came on later in his life. I don't know if he's on the mine site or down in Chelan, but here he is, out for the day. This was taken, I believe, in about 1914. They did set the record for fish taken out of the lake. I don't imagine we'd be allowed to do such a thing today. So there was something over 100 fish there. I don't know what kind of fish these are. Do you, any fishermen here, could you guess what those might be that they pulled out of the lake?
They were in jail for a long time.
Long time now, huh? With even more than one of these, perhaps, huh? Would these be some kind of mackinaw, maybe? Lake trout. And I thought this was a cute shot. I'm not positive which son this is. It might be son number 3, which would be Harry. Harry, the first son was named John Harold, and he was called, the boys were called by their middle names. Names are kind of confusing in the family, but ultimately in life he decided he'd rather be Callie. So son number 3 decided he'd be Harry. So I think this is Harry, Jr. Harry, number 3. And here he is with his dad. Looks like it's probably his grandpa, right? This is John Harold Jr., who became known as Kelly, the first son. He was born in 1899, dressed up in his little Lord Fauntleroy outfit for the photographer. They really dolled the guys up and got precious pictures of them. In 1905, my grandmother and her sisters and half-sisters were all pregnant. They all had boys. The one on the right was hers. That's Charlie. That was son number 2 in his little swashbuckler outfit. Those little precious kids. Cute. And poor Charlie got dressed up in the wild outfits, from what I can see in the collection of photos I've had. So this is son number 1 and 2. By now, Callie got to be in a coat and tie, and Charlie was in this outfit. This is a boy. I don't know if it's fur or what it's made out of. It kind of looks like fur. They did travel with the children as well, and at some point in Callie's life, and he would have been about 10 in this photo, and he and Charlie are on the donkey, mule, whatever it is, he discovered California, and he always wanted to go back there. And either he decided that he was going to talk about California, and that was going to be his dream, and he decided he'd be Callie, or he got nicknamed Callie, which is probably more likely. But Callie stuck. So here they are with Mom and Dad on the road. And I stuck this one in here because he was so impossibly cute. This looks like something right out of Spanky and Our Gang, don't you think? Paint a little black circle around one of the dog's eyes, and you'll have one of the little kids. And this one was captioned, "Proud as Papa." This is Harry. This is son number 3. Lucian Hanford was his real name. Mom called him Hanford. He decided he'd be Harry. Callie is the one we have the most photos for. He was the oldest son. He was up here with his dad when his dad came up to do the summer assessment work. Many, many wonderful stories to tell. Told us about the time he was up here by himself in the cabin up at Honeymoon Heights in the big log cabin, whose remains are still there today, my grandfather's cabin. And he was there with his two dogs, and the cougar was on the roof after the dogs. And that's how they spent the night. So Callie is the one I relied a lot about information as I pulled together the history for the sign and as to get that written. And I rely a lot on him for what I know. He had a tremendous memory, a wonderful recall of detail. He was just fascinating to listen to. He did come up here on his own. Here he is getting the pack horse ready to come up, or maybe they've arrived. Those mountaintops kind of look familiar, and there are the dogs. I think we've decided this is not up here, but perhaps looking back over Chelan, perhaps over Union Valley, and they're on some kind of motorcycle here. Callie's driving. The first 3 boys were born between 1899 and 1908. The family was very involved musically. As I told you, Harry was a fine singer, Alma was very musically inclined. They were very involved with church and community activities and were sponsors of the arts, particularly musical kinds of things. And so at some point, Callie became very involved with music and stayed very involved with music. And this is one of his early bands, and just a great shot, I think, of early Chelan days in the kids' band. Callie's the guy with the slide trombone there on the right. That was his instrument. That and the piano. The first three boys all learned the piano. My dad was the fourth boy. He didn't do music. So here they are, marching by Hoyle's department store in Chelan. Probably in the 19-teens sometime. Don't know what the occasion was for this photo. Maybe somebody's new car. Having a little get-together. And Callie's sitting there on top of the wheel there. Now, Callie went off to World War I, and he did also serve in World War II. This is probably just right after the war, maybe 1918, 1919. This is Alma. She would be just about my age, a little older right now, 43, 44 maybe. This caption on this photo is, "You see, I can smile. Harry has died. Alma is a new widow. And Callie has come home to a place that will change a lot and has changed a lot." So this is in front of the house and the two of them together. Not sure about the boy on the left, but the three boys on the right, including the little tyke in my great-grandmother's arms, are the children. The little guy in my great-grandmother's arms, I believe, is my dad. And that would be Glenn, William Glenn, standing next to his soldier brother, Callie, there. As I told you, Callie was musically trained. He actually had a career in music and was quite successful with it. We went through a series of bands as he grew, and there he is with his slide trombone. Don't quite know what year this is. Can we tell by the dress, the woman's dress, maybe the 1930s? Perhaps, maybe probably earlier than that, huh, 1920s? Yeah, flapper time. Cal Neva Lodge in Lake Tahoe, that's at the North Shore. Callie's probably 40 there, I guess, and maybe 1940 or so. Can't know for sure. A scene from Chelan, what do you think? Actually, this is a movie set on the back lot of 20th Century Fox Studios. Callie's the guy kneeling on the lower left. Callie became a musical director for 20th Century Fox. He was one of, I'm sure, many. He scored the music for the movies and directed the music. And if you ever watch a Shirley Temple movie or any movie of that genre, there will be the full orchestra on the screen with the little band leader directing the band. That's very likely Callie. And here he is talking to perhaps the director there. And you can see the 20th Century name on the bus. Boy number two, Charlie, went to sea. He was the chief engineer on ship board in the Merchant Marines. Worked up around Alaska. Boy number three, Harry, also had a fine voice. Had a beautiful tenor voice, had a band for a time himself. Then there's my dad. I told you they all did music. My dad did athletics. And my dad's a guy standing up, teaching the fella on the rings. My dad was 5'10" and had a size extra large torso. He's quite a strong guy. So this is my picture of my hunky daddy. He became a golf pro. Any golfers here? No? No? Well, he was a golf pro, not the kind that you see on television touring, but the kind that would be a home pro at a club. And he set the course record at the country club there, and on a par 72 course, his record of 63 held for a very long time, which was quite a low score. And then I came along, and yes, I did learn the game from Dad. There's a series of three shots here that I'll show you real quickly that went out on the Associated Press newswire, and so there are photos of me that went out in newspapers all over the country, Kathy getting her golf lesson from Dad. I was 22 months old here. So here's addressing the ball. I want you to notice how close attention I'm paying there. I was a good student. And there's the follow through. And then you have to go get the ball, of course. Green Valley Country Club in Northern California, outside of Fairfield, which is east of the Bay Area. This is the only picture I have of all four boys as adults together. Callie, far right, my dad next to him, Charlie on the left, and Harry second to the left. In 1976, I brought Callie up here with my father, and Callie's wife came along as well. He had not been here for 60 years. He'd gone off to war, and so kind of hard to tell. Maybe so 60 years is a good round number. And he had a ball. I followed him around, put a microphone in his face. I drove him crazy, but I got all the stories as best I could, and I'm real glad I did that. So here's a man who's really thrilled to see what he found here. He did talk in this room, and his reminiscences are on tape in the tape library. If you look under John Harold Holden, I found him today. His tape's in the library, although I'm not sure the tape's actually on the shelf. You might have to talk to the librarian. We went up and found Grandpa's cabin, and I included this slide because I wanted the village to be sure that, yes, in fact, that was the cabin. They're talking about reconstructing it, and they wanted to make sure they had a positive identification. So these are my parents in front of the cabin that my grandfather brought my grandmother to in the summer of 1898, the summer of their wedding year. And I'm not sure she knew what she was getting herself into. When we got here, Callie, before we got there, said it's going to have some certain kind of treated canvas covering the walls, and there's going to be a certain brand name kerosene stove, and they were there. It was really neat. I've got this picture included to show you where Grandpa was standing when he spotted the mine. If you kind of look over my dad's left shoulder there on that ridge that's coming down, that's Martin Ridge, and that's on the way up to Holden Lake there. He was kind of coming out of Holden Lake, and he was looking over here. And it was in the late afternoon. There had been a forest fire, so there weren't many trees in the hill, and the sun was just at the right angle, and he could see that red ledge. The next day, he walked over, and he spent a couple, 3 days trying to find it on the ground. It was very difficult to actually try to find in the ground. And as the story goes, if you get to go up and read the sign, he was hunting. He managed to get a deer, which, of course, fell right on the ledge where the Copper Creek had washed the ledge clean and fresh, and he found it. He came back a few years later. He kept mum about it for a little while and saved up so that he could come back and properly stake the claims. This photo is included to show you the glaciers with the two Holden boys, oldest and youngest. The one on the far right is the Mary Green. That's the one that feeds Holden Lake, which sits up there, hangs up there in that valley behind Martin Ridge. And the one on the left is Isella, which feeds Heart Lake by way of Crown Falls. Here's the three folks that were on the tour. The lady in the middle sitting next to Callie is his wife, Bunny, and a little story about her. She also worked for 20th Century Fox. She worked for them for 30 years, and she did makeup. As things were unionized in those days, men did faces, women did bodies. And they were working in the studio systems. This is the time when they had the stars who made a series of contracts, and Bunny was with Marilyn Monroe through all of her movies. And so body makeup means that you have to match whatever's not covered by clothing to, you know, make it all one color so that it appears right on the camera. So she would be doing Marilyn's arms and shoulders and whatever costume it might be. She was with also Clark Gable and Alice Faye and a number of names that I'm not remembering now, but it was always fascinating to listen to these two talk. This is Nigel Adams talking to Callie. Nigel was the historian that wrote the history about the discovery and production of the Holden mine, which is available in the bookstore, and him, Callie, did help him quite a lot. And this is 1976 or 1977. We did come up a couple of consecutive falls. To close, here's some photos from Harry's last years as he appeared probably age 62 or so, and the photo that appeared in his obituary. And this is as they rest in the graveyard in Chelan in the fraternal cemetery. We brought my grandmother up from California. We disinterred her in 1977 and brought her up and had the headstone made and put them to rest together in the plot where Harry had been buried. So that's the end of my show, and it's time for, we're just on time, aren't we? Thank you for coming. Thank you.
no girls in that family.